Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 15th. I'm Ray Graff. This is one of the most popular shows we do in the entire broadcast month. It is our bird show for today, and we welcome back experienced birder Rich Guthrie and environmental educator and author George Steele to provide insight on everything from identifying birds to feeding them to housing them. It's a fun show, always a popular one. Good to get in line early, 800-348-2551. If you have a question, 1-800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. We talk birds with Rich and George and you right after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program is all about birds. Rich Guthrie and George Steele are here to answer your questions about them. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. George is a wildlife and forest biologist who also spent time with New York's Department of Environmental Conservation, where he worked with birds of prey, also an author. And our number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and George Steele, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Great to be here.
What's happening, Rich?
Hey, well, you notice that it's beginning to feel a little like winter out there.
It's nice.
Yeah. It's a whole new turn of events. The old is out. The new is coming in. And, stand by. New things are ready to happen.
New birds or just the hardy ones stick around?
Well, actually, a little bit of both and then some. The hardy ones are sticking around, and we're finding in the last several years, decade or so, a lot of the birds that were traditionally that were expected to leave are actually staying around.
Such as?
Well, the bluebird and the robin and some of the other migrants that would otherwise be going south are staying longer.
Well, good.
And we wish them luck. I mean, some of these half-hardies, as we call them, the catbird and the brown thrasher some of the warblers like the yellow-rump warbler, well, they might have think twice about that and get out of town while they can.
Right.
But this is what makes a species stronger. You know, these explorers that test the area a little bit longer. It's somewhat to their advantage if they do that. If they don't have to migrate, if they can just stay put,
right.
It takes an awful job off their load.
Yeah. Well, the trick is to not die.
Right,
exactly.
You've got to be able to survive the winter, and we're finding out some of them actually are being able to do this. And that's why we have things like Carolina wrens year-round here, because they stayed. Their species somehow is stronger, and we now have Carolina wrens singing in January, which is a great thing.
George, I heard you mention right before we went on the air, you have 6 Christmas bird counts lined up.
Yeah, Christmas bird count season's coming up pretty quick. And I've been trying to get more than 8 Christmas bird counts done in the season.
Because there's
only what? Well, it's sort of like, it's a fun time, fun thing to do. There's a lot of people involved with it. It's contributing to the, you know, citizen science efforts of trying to figure out what's happening with birds. Like Rich was mentioning, you know, birds like the Carolina wren, one way that that's known is people have been counting birds during that Christmas time, just before Christmas, just after New Year's, and have seen these changes. And, so it's significant data. It's not an exact count, but it gives people, gives ornithologists an idea of, you know, what's around and what's happening. So Rich got me lined up with a Christmas bird count in Vermont. So that starts
terrific.
Yeah, it starts on December 14th. So I got the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, and I think 19th.
Yikes.
Is that the
Yikes
Green County
is right.
count?
Now, have we had an estimate of how many people in the Northeast are actually involved in Christmas bird counts?
Thousands,
yeah,
tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And nationwide, it's hundreds of thousands. And then it's become international. It's become such a meaningful and fun event, social, scientific, and a little challenging. It's competitive to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
You try to do better than the other teams that
without
are
cheating.
Well, wait a minute.
Well, there is what's called poaching, where you're on the boundary between your sector and another team's sector.
Right.
You have to argue, now, is that bird coming over to our side or staying on that side?
Well, you just go over there and pick it up and, you know, tally it up. And if they don't get it, you got it. And that's right, that's exactly, a big plus. Yeah. There's where the competitive edge comes in.
Who is the ultimate arbiter of the final count?
The compiler.
And who's
then
the compiler?
Individual volunteers for each of the count circles. It's a 15-mile radius diameter count circle. And there's an individual who takes the job of getting all the teams lined up, the territories carved out, the timing, and hopefully an after count get together so that you can compare notes and ride and chide, and then that individual is charged with the responsibility of deleting or questioning or demanding details on something unusual, like an aerial that may be on the count. Happens. This is, you know, one of the fun goals. It's not the prime goal, but, you know, when you're in a competitive race.
Okay, but every how do you verify this stuff? And who can verify, all right, I'm the compiler for my group, and let's just say, I'm a little bit unscrupulous, and I pad, because it is competitive, I pad those numbers a wee bit. Who is the is there an international governing body that then checks all this out?
In the Christmas bird count, this is a role I played years ago, and I would be the statewide reviewer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, that's a pretty tough job.
I bet.
Because you have to go back not only over the compiler's judgment, but then back to the observer. And if it's a group of people, the group of observers. And what you're trying to do is make the data significant, usable, reliable. And you try to weed out stuff that will skew the statistics or that patently could be a mistake. And you like to weed out mistakes, honest mistakes.
People. And there's even more. There's a lot of people now that will bring cameras along, and that's always encouraged to try to photo document something, especially if it's unusual. I mean, and almost every team has someone who's going to have a camera, because
mm-hmm.
a typical team will have three or four people on the team going around, and you get something unusual and you try to get a photo of it so that, you know, if people question it, you can get a closer look at it.
And, so the word is a picture or it didn't happen.
Aha. So if Rich Guthrie is the statewide compiler or the statewide reviewer and he demands documentation from Birdwatcher X, that person has to then supply pictures and what, an affidavit signed and notarized?
None of that.
No?
We rely a lot on integrity of our observers and their skill levels. And we also will, where appropriate, just simply delete a record. And there's, you know, that's where eBird comes in. And then there's a sort of the high court of New York State bird watching. And this is the what's known as the Avian Review Committee.
There is an Avian Review Committee.
It most certainly is.
And is it a secret committee?
They are very stringent.
Who's on the committee? Maybe we'll get them on the show.
About a dozen people. My son is one of the committee members.
Really?
Yes, right. He's that good. Right. And these are experts. I mean, these are the top notch, and they are very demanding. If you can't pass muster with them, very scrutinized, very careful review, and they'll politely say no.
Okay, and this being as competitive as it is, one would assume that there's some wagering going on.
I haven't heard of any wagering. Have
Does
you?
Does Vegas take numbers on this?
I haven't heard of any wagering. I don't.
It's okay. Just bragging rights.
All right, fair enough. Oh, by the way, George, you have a new book.
Yes, it's co-author with my wife. It's actually her seventh book, so I'm sort of riding on her coattails.
Oh, I see.
It's Wait Till It Gets Dark, A Kid's Guide to Exploring the Night. It's for third, fourth grade readers. But the whole thing is to get kids out exploring nature.
Wandering around in the dark.
Yeah,
oh, that's
wandering
great.
Around in the dark time. But, when you consider, I mean, half of our life is nighttime. If you spend it only daytime looking and exploring, you're going to miss out on all the things that are happening at nighttime. A lot of bird life, of course, but amphibians, insect life, lots of things that mammals, most of our mammals are essentially nocturnal, going around at nighttime. So the book encourages that. It's published by a new company called Muddy Boots. We love their slogan, We Jump in Puddles.
Nice.
And the whole idea is, again, their philosophy is getting kids outdoors.
Yeah.
And anyone who does environmental education, I mean, that's always a big thing of just, you know, getting away from
the Xbox
yeah. and the iPod right. or iPad or iPhone and go exploring.
It's a trick these days. Back in our day, we didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, there was softball and football. And,
right.
Yeah,
or just romping in the woods.
Turning over rocks.
Yeah. Playing some numbers on the old bird count. That used to be fun. All right, let's take a couple of calls before the first break. Rich Guthrie is here. George Steele here. It's The Bird Show, 800-348-2551. Mary in Glenmont. Mary, you're on.
Hi, I live on the river in Glenmont, and I've always left my bird feeder up all year round, despite the bear warnings. Every spring they tell you to take your feeder down, and I don't. Well, this year the bear took it down for me.
Okay.
So my question is, when is it safe to put the feeder back up?
Okay.
I mean, bears are still around. They'll be around pretty much. I mean, a lot of it depends on weather. Into December, usually by the end of December, I think the DEC does actually have a recommended date, but it's when the bears are in the dens asleep for wintertime.
Okay.
That's the best time.
Is there a place I can check on that?
Well, it's all very local, microclimate generated. And so I would think that down along the Hudson River in New York, it's probably later in the season than, let's say, on the ledges of the Catskill Mountains or the Berkshires. So right now, I think they're getting a little sleepy right now. So any day now, in Glenmont, New York, I would say probably this week or next, after this storm comes through this weekend, which is what they're predicting, that it'd be a good time to give it a go.
Okay. Snow? A snowstorm?
I heard that.
They were calling for snow, yeah.
Oh, come on. How much?
A mix of stuff. Not accumulation, but they in this area, but out west in Buffalo
Lakeshore,
they're talking, you know, stuff.
Because I have to have the snowblower tuned up, I'll be honest.
You don't need it this week.
Really?
No. Take my word for it.
Rich Guthrie, amateur meteorologist and the bird watcher deluxe. George Steele is here. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Back with more calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, ThermaTru Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care all on one campus. DaughtersofSarah.org. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Today, Rich Guthrie is here and George Steele. They're here to talk birds with you, and we'll do one quick email and then back to the phones. This one's from Lou in Old Chatham. Lou writes, I have an outside cat. Can I do something to keep the birds safe from her? I was thinking about fencing in a small area so the ground-feeding birds don't get eaten. Love the show. Lou in Old Chatham.
Lou, good question. Keep the cat inside. All right, here's another possibility. You know what I love is the idea of keeping the cat outside. I really am for that, but put it in an enclosure. And there are these cat habitats that are out there. And it's a great possibility. The cat has all the freedom to roam around, you know, within the enclosure, enjoys all the outdoors a cat can handle, and then come in when it starts raining and you can feed it and pet it and be happy.
That seems like a good
I'm all for
medium.
That. And if people are going to keep cats, take the responsibility and make it happen for everybody's benefit, the cat especially.
Yeah, I mean, the cats are always in danger of, you know, getting hit by cars or as they say, coyotes, maybe getting a few cats here and there. But they're definitely havoc on the wildlife.
Do the coyotes ever get birds?
Probably, grouse and turkeys are probably fair game for a coyote. But the small birds, you know, the coyotes are not that stealthful.
What about a fox?
A fox, the same thing. A fox is very clever, and we'll probably be able to get a few more birds than a coyote. Well, but coyotes, that's not their principal game, unless it's, you know, like I say, grouse or turkey, ground birds.
Yeah, coyotes are looking a lot for the mice.
Okay. Yeah. And the cats look for the mice.
That too. Yeah,
so there's the wheel of life.
Yeah, right. Although then they're going for chipmunks and things like that too. So
yeah. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 and Raphael in Hopewell Junction. You're on.
Yes. Hello. I have two bluebird houses, and all summer we have 2 to 3 batches in each. But after the warm spell, my husband saw a bluebird sitting on top of the box. And when he later peeked inside, there were 2 eggs. Obviously, no one's sitting on them now. But is that really unusual, or what happened here?
Well, by how late in the year was that? What month are you talking about?
This was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that is late. That's very unusual. And birds will recycle, will try to produce as many broods as they can get through the season, 2 or 3. 3 is very unusual, and that late in the season, very actually unfortunate timing, and you could see why. It just simply didn't work.
Yeah.
You think it had to do with the warm spell that we had, unusually warm weather?
Probably not. I think there's just, you know, they made an attempt. They didn't it didn't happen. If it happened, they're a little bit ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Yep. You know.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Lee in Greenwich. Lee, you're on.
Hi, guys. Hi, Richie. George, how are we doing? Good afternoon.
Hello there.
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. I think we may have lost Lee. We'll give him...
Sounded like he was on a mobile.
I think he may have been.
Do a comment.
Oh, bad cell phone.
Try it again, Lee. We had a dropout on your signal. Try it again.
Okay. Well, I was concerned about, I wanted to know about West Nile virus and affecting raptors. I haven't seen a lot of juvenile red-tailed hawks this year, and it's more than just anecdotal. And I've been hearing a lot from other birders that's what they're seeing across the Hudson Valley and out through the Finger Lakes. I wanted to hear your comments and thoughts about that. Previous caller had mentioned that about the bluebird situation. Perhaps photo period may have had something to do with that as well. And thirdly, I also wanted to know about the endangered species status for the peregrine falcon. I see a lot of them. I know the numbers are up, and federally they've been delisted. What are your thoughts about here in New York State and what you're seeing about the population of peregrine falcons?
Okay, that's a lot to unpack here. So why don't we go last to first?
No, I'll do the red-tailed hawk thing first.
Okay.
And that is, that's more, West Nile virus is overrated. It's a factor, but not significant in the wild bird population that we are aware of. More likely, what we're seeing is the red-tailed hawk has been doing so well that it's actually saturated its environmental niche. And when that happens, they simply back off. They let up on the accelerator and coast for a little while. So the production of young, the immature birds, will probably slow down until they can balance out their role.
Okay.
And the other one is with regard to the bluebirds. Yeah, good speculation. Birds will try anything. If they get away with it, like George said, then that's good. If it doesn't work, well, no harm in trying for the most part.
The photo period hasn't changed. I mean, we're getting less and less light. Later summer, you know, most birds are winding down. They're just, you know, they've done what they're going to do as far as breeding. But
all right,
and as far as the peregrine falcon,
yeah.
It's a similar situation as with the red-tailed hawk. They're out there occupying just about every possible available niche in New York State, in Connecticut, Massachusetts. They just simply have filled the vacuum. And now the cup runneth over. The official status of peregrine in New York, do you know?
I'm not sure. I haven't really heard much about it. I think it may...
Still endangered, according to Lee.
Is it? Obviously, you can Google it quickly, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. But that's got to change.
All right, Lee.
Because they're up there where they belong.
Thank you for the call, Lee. We appreciate it. We are joined today by George Steele and Rich Guthrie on this bird edition of Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the number. And Mike in Saratoga Springs is next. Mike.
Hello, my favorite ornithologist. I just have a quick question about a tree in my backyard that with a couple history. I'll make it quick, though. So here's the scenario historically. Last fall, 2016, it's like a mini crab apple tree, almost look like berries. Around this time, maybe a little earlier in the year, we got like a little flock of robins came in and ate all the berries within like one day, and it was empty.
Go back
to the spring of 2016. They survived the winter then, and they were more sun-dried in the spring of 2016, and it was like a small flock of cedar waxwings found them and ate them in the spring coming back. So they're still on the tree now. So my question is, did they survive the robins? Because I'd rather much have the waxwings in the spring. I'm wondering.
Well, the crabapple crop comes and goes, and last year the crabapple crop was not very abundant. Again, it's sort of first come, first serve. If there's a lot of crabapples around, you know, whoever gets them will get them. And, you know, so it's more, I think, of just what was around. And last year I know that there was seemed a lot less numbers of robins and Christmas bird counts because of the crabapple, you know, abundance or lack thereof.
And birds, flocks of birds will wander around the countryside looking for available food. When they find a bounty, such as an apple tree full of crab apples, they're just going to descend on that. They're going to keep coming back until they've had their fill.
Yeah.
If it's overlooked until spring, well, then the next marauding bunch of birds will be the waxwings, and here they come. And there's also a benefit in the spring is that the fruit itself has had a chance to freeze and thaw, and that changes the chemistry of the fruit and makes it a little more delectable for the guys.
Yeah. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie and George Steele. And now it's Paul's turn. Paul in Saratoga, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know that you've spoken about this topic, particularly in the last time you were on, and that's the topic of disappearing songbirds. And I'm calling from the town of Saratoga, just east of the Saratoga Lake. And in early August, our birds just literally disappeared. And I'm talking all of them, cardinals, titmice, chickadees, wrens, robins, you name them. Everybody who came to the feeders, gone. And they haven't returned. I know at the time you said, well, it's because there's an abundance of, you know, natural food out there. And I think that it was a good year for natural food. My anecdotal observation was even stronger last year, and we didn't have this occur. And my question is, we are up in dairyland country, industrial dairy farms. And I know that they are using, you know, pesticides and GMO products. And boy, from what you read, the new high potency products really do a number on bees, butterflies, all the flying insects. And frankly, flying insects have all but disappeared up here. And it kind of feels like no insects for the birds to eat, in addition to our bird feed, equals birds go somewhere else.
Well, you're right about that.
What do you think of that hypothesis?
It's all about the food. And now, this is where events such as the Christmas bird counts play a very important role in monitoring these undulations, these pendulum swings of bird populations, trends that
I'm
come and go.
Oh, you're a counter. Oh, good for you.
Yep.
Oh, great. And this is where, you know, so things happen. I think it's a little too soon to bring the gavel down on this agriculture uses, but you got a point there. And I think that there is a matter of great concern. Now what we need to do is verify it so that the argument or the persuasiveness of our concern is a little more convincing. So these Christmas bird counts and breeding bird surveys and others, such as eBird, documentation of bird population trends is important to monitor. I think that, again, I'm going to go back to what I where I was earlier the last month or so, and that is that let's wait and see. I think that when as winter progresses, the feeder birds will come in. They're less insectivorous birds. They're more seed eaters. And next spring, when the warblers and tanagers and vireos and orioles return, we'll look and see what their numbers are. There's so many factors out there and so much room for concern between their summer habitat destruction, migratory rigors of migration, and then also the winter habitat requirements. And here I'll put a pitch in for shade-grown coffee. You know, when you take a pound of shade-grown coffee versus the other stuff, and boil it down, so to speak, and analyze it per cup, it ain't that much different. So it's worth the few extra pennies to have that shade-grown coffee. It'll benefit the birds in their winter, where it's critical for them to survive before they make their return trip.
George, you want to add something there?
It's just reading what Rich has said. I mean, it's so hard to pinpoint what affects, you know, the birds coming and going. Obviously, anything that deals with pesticides or any kind of environmental pollutant is always going to be a concern. So I think it's just a matter of you can't base it on 1 year's observation.
Yep.
And it's looking at trends and seeing what's happening. And, it's the kind of thing that, on the other side, people say, well, you know, how can you prove it? And it becomes very difficult.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie on George Steele. And we go to Patrick in Troy. Patrick, you're on.
Yes, hello. I hope this isn't a real silly question, but what should I do with the very dead but still very beautiful cardinal I found in the driveway the other morning?
Well, pity that. First of all, specimens such as that, unfortunate as they are, can have a valuable place in posterity, and that is in a museum or university collection. So a cardinal, probably not so much. It would be important to know what killed it, how it met its demise, and I'm going to suspect a window was probably played a role in that.
Well, there isn't a window real nearby, but there are a bunch of cars in the driveway. But other than that, there was no sign of foul play.
Yeah, okay.
Although there is a cat in the neighborhood, but he's not talking.
Yeah, the chances are, guilty as cats are, he's probably not the suspect this time.
Anyone who's going to keep the bird has to have a permit because it's protected by several Migratory Bird Act and things like that.
A dead bird,
really? Right. So, yeah. Technically, you're not even supposed to have a blue jay feather.
There are reasons for that.
There's a possibility if you check, there's a variety of nature centers that might have permits to be able to have a bird specimen like that. So that's, beyond just the colleges and universities and, say, the State Museum and things like that, which will
like
have
a pine bush or something?
You could check and see if they would be interested in it.
You can't just go to your local taxidermist and say, here you go.
And he will say no.
That was my first thought.
No.
Right. I mean, they stand a big chance of getting a big fine.
Really?
For
a cardinal in a driveway?
Technically, if you have all these school teachers that have robin's nests that kids bring in, and, you know, it'd be a sad day if an ECO went into a school and busted a teacher for having a robin's nest. But again, they are protected by law because there's no way to know when that was collected. Was someone collecting it when the robins were nesting?
Right.
So it covers the broad base of, you know.
Well, there was a time when people went out and made a hobby of shooting birds and putting them in display cases back in the Victorian era.
Yeah.
And it got out of hand. And people were shooting up the countryside, taking small birds and stuffing them and sticking them on the mantle.
But, I mean, Patrick, so, you could prove understood. He didn't shoot any bird, and it was in the driveway.
The rule is no.
Yeah.
And simply flat out no. And there are permits. There are ways to make good specimens. I endorse that rigorous requirement.
You seem like bird fascists to me.
No. Just trying to stick to the rules and keep it for their benefit.
All right, let's go to Bob in Cherry Valley. Bob, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Need help identifying a bird. It was about the size of a crow, solid white, had a yellow beak and probably black legs, about 5 or 6 inches long, and it flew just like a heron.
Oh, where are you?
I'm in Cherry Valley.
Okay. I'm going to suggest, if you have a bird guide, check out Cattle Egret.
That's
a white bird with a long white yellow bill, and there is one out that way, as a matter of fact. Cattle Egret. Interesting bird. They originated, these are the ones that stand on the back of the water buffaloes you see in the pictures of National Geographic in Africa.
We don't have a lot of water buffaloes.
By the horses.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly the place
Yeah, check it out. They came over naturally on their own. They flew apparently across to Brazil from Africa, and then started colonizing the New World from South America and expanded their range northward and are now found out there in Cherry Valley.
Now, that's interesting. You said there's one out there.
There is one in Montgomery County.
Only one?
Yeah, that's how rare they are in the east. But down south and further west, they're more numerous.
Very
interesting. Cattle egret. Fascinating creature. I love it when this stuff happens naturally. I'm not so much a fan when some people intervene and make it happen themselves, you know, like pigeons and starlings.
One, how long can one last? One would need to procreate, yeah?
Yeah, well, he'll move on. He'll get his act straightened out, and he'll find. And this is how we have sandhill cranes nesting in New York now, because one became two, and two became more, and then more and more.
All of a sudden, there's a little population, yeah.
Can one become two without two?
No, but they're confused.
They got to have a dating service.
This is what
I'm
saying. Yeah.
If they sing loud enough or do their courtship dance. And,
yeah, they'll wander around, and if one wandered in, you know, as it wanders about, some. You know, they might find, and then maybe this one will never find a mate. You know, it just is in the wrong place, and that's it for its, you know, genetic.
And that happens a lot. Yeah.
So fascinating. So this cattle egret went from Africa to Brazil. That's a long flight.
It is, and most of them don't make it. But birds do cross the ocean regularly. We had a fascinating bird down on Long Island this last couple of weeks called the corncrake, which is a tiny little bird, about small chicken size. And it ended up on a parkway in State Park in New York City, Long Island, New York.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately, it walked out into traffic.
Long Island Expressway?
Well, no, on the South Shore or something, Fire Island Expressway.
And now it's found a home at the American Museum of Natural History.
All right, we need to take a break on that unhappy note. 800-348-2551 is the number. George Steele and Rich Guthrie are here. We'll be back with a home stretch.
Support for WMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George, hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. The University at Albany Theater Program, presenting the classic story A Doll's House by Henrik Ibsen, today through Sunday at the Uptown Campus in the Studio Theater, albany.edu/theater. And the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, now taking reservations for romantic getaway packages and special events. Heated deck for waterfront dining, the1850house.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. George Steele is here. They are here to answer your questions about birds. And before we get back to the phones, Rich, you have brought your list.
Yes.
It's on a long papyrus scroll.
Yes.
So let's move it along.
Move it on. Here we go. Golden eagles. This is the season. They begin their migration sometime in the end of October, but right now they're peaking and they're migrating through in numbers. If you want to see golden eagles, my friend Tom Sallow from Delaware, Otsego Audubon Society, tells me now's the time to go. Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch. That's down there by Oneonta, New York.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, Friday, not so much Saturday and Sunday are the days to go down there for the weather that is prime for golden eagle migration, plus the other hawks that move through. Some other possibilities, if you're not near Franklin Mountain, is Mount Peter Hawk Watch. That's over there in by Greenwood Lake down in Orange County, New York.
Yep.
Quaker Ridge Hawk Watch down in Greenwich, Connecticut. It's Greenwich up here and Greenwich down there.
You are, old boy.
Yes. And there are others. Mount Tom out by Springfield, the Holyoke, Massachusetts. Check them out. You can go to hawkcount.org. That's hawkcount.org, and that will tell you where hawk watch opportunities are around the area.
Okay.
Now, the local bird clubs, important weekends coming up. The Albany Pine Bush and the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club are getting together to talk about the lessons learned from bird research at the Albany Pine Bush. That's going to be on December 4th at 7 p.m. at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center near Del Mar, New York. Eastern Orange Lakes, the Mearns Bird Club, .org, on November 18th, 8:30 in the morning, field trip to look at ducks and things out on the lakes of Orange County, New York. Mm-hmm. The Hoffman Bird Club in Pittsfield is having some field trips coming up. Check them out, hoffmanbirdclub.org. They're having a meeting on December 4th at 7 p.m. over in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And then the Copaic Lake Duck Walk.
Uh-huh.
Quack, quack. The Alan DeVoe Bird Club.org. Alan DeVoe Bird Club.org. November 25th at 9 in the morning, Copaic Lake. And then one more, and that is the Waterman Bird Club will be looking around the Vassar College campus down by Poughkeepsie, New York, November 22nd at 9 a.m. Waterman Bird Club. They're late songbirds for the most part.
Okay, not co-eds.
All sorts of birds.
All right.
And then at Croton Point, New York, the Croton Point Nature Center is having Project Feeder Watch with the Sawmill River Audubon Society. That's every Saturday and Sunday through the winter months at 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Check out sawmillriveraudubon.org and go for it.
And?
Now's the time.
That's it?
Yeah, we're done. I told you. Quick.
Boy, that was very, very quick
indeed.
Check
the Bird Club websites.
Okay.
Lots of information.
And quickly, before we get back to the phones, George, if people want to get involved with bird counts, is it too late to do that?
Nope. There's actually, if you Google bird counts, I think, Audubon has a listing of where bird counts are. Just check in with anyone who's into birds. I mean, there's different, as Rich was saying, there's different compilers, so you have to connect with the compiler, and then everyone is looking to,
okay.
You know, you don't have to be an expert birder.
The qualifications for this?
Well, it's a tough day because if you're with a team, you start early in the morning. There are some teams that are sort of more laissez-faire. They might wait a little bit, but most teams start early in the morning. Totally acceptable, you know, if someone, you know, is tired out and they, you know, they'll cut out at a certain point in time. But, you know, it's cold weather.
Right.
You got to be dressed for it. You're in a car going from here to there, maybe walking a bit. Depends on the sector you're working on. Everyone that I've ever done Christmas bird counts with is always open to beginners, people, and are very helpful with it, you know, how to identify birds. And the thing about Christmas bird counts, too, is you have less birds to have to worry about. So it's easier to start.
Oh, you make a point.
In New York State, you can find out about all of the bird counts by going to nysbird.org. That's the New York Ornithological Association. They have all a list of all the bird counts in New York.
It would be helpful if they had links to other states in the nearby region.
Yes.
Maybe they should do that.
Maybe.
Maybe you could make a call?
We could get them on it.
All right, let's go to Betsy in Delhi. Betsy, you're on.
Hi, just want to say love your music.
Oh, thank you.
Reminds me of my dad, who was an avid bird watcher when he was alive.
Nice.
My question is, again, like a previous caller up towards Lake George, I'm down in the East Branch, Hancock area, and my in-laws have been concerned over the past couple of months, again, about disappearing birds. They have bird feeders up all year long, and everything has disappeared, like the chickadees and the jays and the wrens. And he was just wondering whether there's a cause for this or I don't know.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I'm hearing this all in a lot of places from a lot of different directions. And I will stand by and say, wait and see. My feeders are active. I have you know, the whole parade of birds coming in. So what we're hearing from is people who are noticing an absence. We're not hearing so much from the people who are, no, things are business as usual. So I think that we're going to wait and see. After this Christmas bird count season data is compiled, we'll have another discussion about that.
Right. I mean, I have, where I am, there's many birds,
right.
You know, they're coming and going. And as I travel around the state doing my school programs, again, encountering, you know, birds around.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to say what, you know, when people are missing some things, if they're just missing them because they're someplace else, or if there's really, you know, lack of birds in that area.
So we need a bigger body of data here.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Sam in Williamstown. Sam, I am, you're on.
Hi there. My question is around the disruption to the migratory patterns of birds in the fall. And the question is prompted by reading about the very disturbing fact that the monarch butterflies were fooled, I think, many of them fooled, and there's a few weeks ago when it was still warm, and stayed too far north, and now there's a great fear that because of cold temperatures now, the monarch doesn't fly, isn't happy about flying under 50 degrees. So the same parallel, what are the parallel concerns on the bird world as to migratory birds and the fact that they may not make it to their winter home?
Well, I don't think it's a factor so much. Birds are not directed by local climate conditions. They're more seasonal, and they use the cues of the sun rise and sunset, length of day, that will generate their impulse to move. So the parallel with insects like the monarch butterfly is just simply not there. So, and as with the monarch butterfly, we got our fingers crossed. They went actually through a very difficult time in their population cycle. This year has been
a phenomenal year compared to the last several. 4 or 5 years. Definitely
and
much
very
better
heartening.
Year.
Yeah. Very heartening.
This one came in via email from Alan, different Alan than the famous one who walks these hallways.
Alan.
This is another Alan. I'm sure very, very lovely person as well. My wife loves spreading old bread around for birds. Can this be good for the birds?
Sure. Sure. There's an old myth out there that bread is not good for birds. Not true.
Okay.
Too much of anything is not good. Bread has nutrients in it, despite what people claim, and birds will relish it. If it's not good, they won't eat it. The birds know. They're not dumb. They know what's good.
And they're not just depending upon the bread. They're going to be moving about, getting food from natural sources,
right.
A bird feeder next door or whatever. Yeah, an interesting thing on the migration thing I was reading is the effect of light on birds. Lights from cities and bird behavior about disrupting migration. And, you know, when we look at light pollution, and it's one of the things, too, with this Wait Till It Gets Dark book about, you know, we've affected birds and a lot of other things, too. Sea turtles, for instance, is another example of where so much light. It's just interesting if we could just shut off some of the lights that are left on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Dark sky movement. I'm all for it.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones here, and we go to Tom in Corinth. Tom, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. How are you?
Good.
Great.
Hey, I live in Corinth. It's between Saratoga and Glens Falls, and I've got to get on that missing bird bandwagon with the previous caller.
All right.
We've built this house in the middle of the woods 12 years ago, and it's had bird feeders up ever since. And we've had chickadees, hatches, titmice, woodpeckers, both downy and hairy, and they've been on there constantly every season until this last Columbus Day, and we haven't seen a chickadee in a month and a half.
Well, I may be the ostrich with the head in the sand, but I'm going to stand there.
Okay.
And we'll see.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, keep feeding the birds and see what happens. You know, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, if there's, you know, just a mass loss of birds. But, again, I know, you know, I've noticed, you know, chickadees, you know, as they move through in bands like that. But, you know, again, it's, you know, it's hard to say not being in that area. But the only thing to do is, you know, keep at it, keep observing, see what happens. I mean, if you go through the whole winter season with, you know, I guess part of it, too, is look at how much bird seed you use up. And,
You
know, if you find out that, you know, one bag of bird seed has lasted you the whole season, and in previous years you might have gotten so many other bags.
Right.
But, again, it's just, you know, trying to collect data.
All right, let's go to Ruby and Phoenicia. Ruby, you're on.
Yes, hi. A couple of questions. Which birds eat ticks, rather?
Which birds eat ticks?
Guinea fowl.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
That's a famous barnyard bird for tackling ticks, chickens, barnyard chickens.
Yeah, chickens.
And any of the ground birds.
Yeah, the ground birds.
The robin, the bluebird, the sparrows.
They all eat ticks.
Sure.
Yeah, any of those little insects that are hopping, jumping around the ground, I mean, they're not going to look and say, oh, you know, that's a Columbula or, you know, a tick. I mean, they'll just, whatever's hopping around. And you'd be amazed if you looked on the ground, there's a huge number of small insects jumping around. The snow fleas are the ones that, you know, you don't even notice, but these tiny little black specks jumping around. So
yeah.
These birds on the ground, they spot them.
Okay. And the other question?
Amazing that there were that many ticks in the beginning of the season with birds.
Well, that's another thing. And, the tick story is a whole different thing and very concerning.
All right.
Another quick question. My wife spotted a very large nest in the crook of a tree high up. And we've seen squirrels' nests before that were nowhere near this size. An eagle's nest is the only thing I've ever seen that was.
Is it very leafy or is it a very stick-like nest?
It's very dark brown. It doesn't look like any leaves, but from the distance, it's hard to tell.
Well, it could be a hawk nest.
Any movement or activity in there, so I don't know if it's abandoned or not.
Well, it's probably not being used anymore.
Not
until
next spring, yeah.
So I would check out that, you know, it's probably a hawk nest of some sort. Depends on the environment. There are lots of possibilities for those large stickers.
Keep an eye on it for next spring, because that'll be a nest that would likely be used over again.
Okay, thank you for the call. And over to Kathy in the Berkshires. Kathy, you're on.
Yes, I also noticed there hasn't been any songbirds in my yard. I had a bag of seed last me all summer. And I also noticed that when I travel in the car, there's no bugs splattered on the windshield. We used to be able to, you know, clean the windshield off at the gas station. I never have to do that anymore.
Oh, boy. Well, another piece of this picture that's being put together. And again, we'll see. It's just a roller coaster ride for the environment out there. And I'm not ready to bring the alarm on yet.
Okay.
I'm concerned, and I'm listening about these chemicals that are being used in agriculture. Definitely keep an eye, because it affects the insects, affects the birds, it affects the people. So we do want to know about that.
Let's go over to Jan in Hopewell Junction. Jan, you're on.
Hi, I have a question for you.
Sure.
We have a beautiful male bluebird who's continuously pecking at our windows. Three seasons, spring to fall.
Okay.
He's right now. And our house is full of glass, both upstairs and downs. And this bluebird has tried every single window. Obviously, seeing his reflection. And we've tried putting the blinds down. That doesn't work. We can't dangle things in every single window. What do we do?
Yes, the age-old question.
At least he's not slamming into the window, which is more problematic when birds see tree reflections in windows and are flying full tilt to land in that tree, not realizing there's a window there. But, you know, one of the things is, you know, if you leave lights on, that's going to reduce the reflection from the outside. It's, you know, mm-hmm. You have a dark inside, you have the very light outside, it will reflect off the window. And, you know, I guess that's the biggest thing. I mean, eventually he's going to get, you know, you would think that by now he's sort of lost his I'm the best looking bird
right.
in this neighborhood kind of attitude and go on to just the non-breeding season activities. But
well, I mean, they're not that smart, right?
Well, this one here, this is an exceptional bluebird.
Really? Exceptionally dumb bluebird?
Yeah, well, maybe banged into the window once too often.
He's pecking at the, couldn't he break the window?
No.
He's not. He's trying to chase away that other male who's trying to chase away him.
Yeah. He's
just the exception.
Now, you had mentioned a holographic sticker of some kind.
Yes, and they're out there. I would recommend that go to the local bird specialty store, such as
Wild Birds Unlimited
up in Saratoga Springs, and check out the inventory on reflective ultraviolet reflecting tape that you can put on a window to deflect the birds away. But that's not going to work with a bird that's trying to defend its territory against a window. That's gently tapping against the glass. That's against the fast flying bird slamming into the window. We're trying to avoid that.
So light might work.
I mean, anything that's going to stop the reflection. Okay. Stop its reflection, yeah.
And I think I would enjoy that bluebird.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jan, good luck. I'm afraid we'll have to get some
video of it, put it on YouTube, and get thousands of hits.
There you go. Okay, that's the way you do it today, indeed. So the light, the bird can see a higher spectrum of light. Is that how the?
Oh yes, they see stuff outside of our spectrum, both above and below our light spectrum, infrared and ultraviolet and the like. But I do want to say, if people are interested in this bird population activity at the bird feeders, Project Feeder Watch at Cornell University and eBird, two Cornell University websites that you can engage in and contribute your observations and make a big picture out of small observations.
Well, Rich Guthrie and George Steele, thank you, gentlemen, for being here. That was a fast show.
Sure was. Quick.
Very nice indeed. Support comes from Lathrop Communities, independent living in Northampton at East Hampton, Massachusetts, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition, together transforming the experience of aging, lathrop.kendall.org. NatureWorks Organic Land Care, specializing in innovative ecological landscape construction of outdoor living spaces, all organic food systems and garden features, design, installation, and organic maintenance. NatureWorksLandCare.com. Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and George Steele for being here today. Thank you for all the great calls and emails. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Carol Lapani for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Gordon Fricke will be in the studio to answer your automotive questions. Right now, stand by for news.